Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
Well, every week we get to sit down with Bob Motta and find out what crazy new things have happened in the world of the Delphi murder case. A case where everybody just wants justice for two little girls. Unfortunately, as we've seen in the last year, the case has almost turned into anything but, more so, a referendum on the legal and judicial system and police system in Delphi, Indiana. Here to discuss the latest, as always, Bob Motta. Bob, we got two original actions this last week that have been addressed by the Supreme Court of Indiana. That first one talking about Judge Gull and almost kind of being moot, if you will. They kind of think Judge Gull getting back into the docket, correcting things, fixed all of that problem. Why don't you enlighten us a little bit more on that motion, what it was about, and why it's pretty much sitting there and they're saying, okay, we're good on that one before we get to number two.
Yeah. Hey, Tony, how are you, man? Good to see you. So that first original action was basically exactly what you said. You know, if you follow the Delphi case at all, really, since the moment that Richard Allen was arrested, the docket was handled in a very peculiar way, in the sense that the judge who she's a subsequent judge, like the original judge, this Judge Diener, had recused himself from the case right after the arrest, and he was the judge. And remember, Carroll County is very small. Mm-hmm. Very, very small county, not many judges at all over there. So when Diener recused himself, basically citing his concern for the bloodlust from the public, which at this point seems prophetic or like he knew something, you know, in terms of how this case was going to go down. So they ended up assigning a special judge, which was Judge Gull from a different county. She's up in Allen County, which is up in northern Indiana, much, much bigger county, much, much bigger court system up there. They have a lot of judges up there. It's probably one of the top three cities in terms of population in Indiana. You know, you got Indianapolis and Fort Wayne, which is where it's housed, right in that county, is a pretty big town up there. So she ends up coming down, taking over the case, and right away, like right after the arrest of Allen, like the prosecutor's office says, hey, you know what, we want to file this PCA under seal, you know, and I think that we've discussed this a bit. I was scratching my head as to why, you know, I mean, publics are supposed to be trials are supposed to be public. You know, we want that for transparency, for accountability, for various reasons. You know, none of which more important than the fact that it's constitutionally mandated that trials are public.
Yeah.
So,
if nothing, you know, for like, that reason.
I mean, that's a big one, right? So, like right away, I'm kind of like, man, what's going on with this thing? You know, I had done a couple of podcast episodes about it. I'm like, this is strange. So I think she ended up releasing the PCA, unsealing it in December, if I'm correct. And when I saw it, I'm like, wow, yeah, why did she seal this? It's like your typical PCA. Yes, obviously it's dealing with, you know, a very traumatic event where two beautiful little girls lost their lives. But I mean, the fact of the matter is every murder is horrific.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all of them, whether it be children, I mean, we feel it more because obviously our thoughts automatically go to our kids. So we feel that empathy in a different way. You know, but every single loss of life like that is tragic, you know? So I was wondering what made her do that. And a couple of days later, the defense issued a press release where basically they countered the PCA, which is not typical. Typically PCA comes out, that thing's floating out there. And, you know, that is what ruminates in everybody's head while trials pending, you know, like that kind of like the state's theory of the case is typically what everyone is basing their initial opinion of innocence or guilt on. And that's why almost everybody in every criminal case, when there's a PCA, leans heavy guilty, because that's the only story you're hearing. Like mm-hmm. if I could just tell one side of a story all the time, people would probably believe me, no matter if it was true or not, because sure. they're not hearing an opposing side of it. So it was unusual that they did that. I, as a defense attorney, loved it. I was like, wow, that really evens the playing field. That gets the defense's narrative out, the defendant's narrative out. And I like that. We want an even playing field going into a trial. So I think that kind of irritated the judge, which was evidenced by the fact that she very quickly ordered a gag on the case, mm-hmm. meaning that none of the lawyers, nobody involved with the case was allowed to talk to the media about the case other than, you know, procedurally what may have happened in the court that day. Like, can't talk about any underlying facts, can't talk about innocence or guilt, any of that stuff. So, you know, it continues to progress. And like, I'm watching the docket pretty thoroughly. And, you know, I'm like, man, I'm like, there's just not much going on with this case early on, you know, and there wasn't. There was a couple things filed by the defense. There was this one thing called a let for bail, where they were trying to come in and say, look, we don't think, based on what was in that probable cause affidavit, that there's enough there to keep him held in custody without bail, or with such a high bail amount that, you know, he could never possibly come up with that money. It's the equivalent of not having a bail. You know, so I was excited about that hearing, because what that would have meant is that would have forced the state to provide more evidence. You know, it's like I spent many, many months battling with people on Twitter. I don't know if they practice law or not. I tend to think that they did not, that were of the mindset that law enforcement holds back huge smoking gun pieces of evidence from PCAs. And that's just, I'm here to tell you, that's not the case. I mean, they're going to put their best foot forward, typically in terms of a PCA, because they understand exactly what I was just talking about. That is what is going to be out in the public. Mm-hmm. They want, I mean, if you have the advantage of getting your story out first and having it sit out there, you're going to want it to be as powerful as possible.
Sure.
And you know, and there's no logical reason why they would hold anything back, because the defense gets everything in discovery anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, whatever they have at the time, pre the post-arrest investigation, they're going to put in the PCA typically. And, you know, I'm just sitting there. I'm like, man, like I couldn't wait for that hearing. And I get there and it turned out that it didn't happen. And there was no, like, kind of no notice of it. So like, I started to see this trend, you know, because I'm always in person in the courthouse over there, that, you know, the docket would say one thing and then I'd get there and it was something different that was being handled. And she had basically sealed off the file, like where we can't even see the court filings. You know, it's one thing, like typically we don't have access to discovery, like evidence and things of that nature pretrial, but it's very unusual for us not to be able to look and see what the pleadings are, motions that are filed, all that kind of stuff. I mean, that is always supposed to be public domain, and we're supposed to be able to, again, for transparency and accountability. We should be able to see that, especially in this day and age when you have the internet just frothing at the mouth over true crime. You know, I mean, we all are very interested and we all want to know what's going on. And, you know, in considering that that's kind of the climate that we live in now, you know, I found that it was very unusual, and I didn't know why she was at that point kind of keeping the case in the shadows. And so it continues on up until June. And I think at the hearing in June, when defense counsel was trying to get Richard Allen moved the first time, you know, that she announced publicly that in court that she was going to be releasing 118 documents. There was going to be a big document drop. And then it came to be known that she, instead of just putting them on the docket, she ended up creating this weird website, or the clerk's office, whoever created it. And, you know, that they were going to dump them in there for the public to access them. And then when that happened, I found it very troublesome, very, very difficult for, you know, like nothing was organized. Couldn't tell what one document was. None of the documents were titled. Like they were all dated the exact same date, like which was the day that they dropped them. You know, so yeah. It's like,
I want to ask you about that specifically. Was that just like gross negligence in that, or was there like a purpose to this? Like, let's make this as convoluted and difficult as we possibly can make. We're not going to drop them the way we should, the way we already have a system in place to do so. We're going to invent something new. We're going to go to GeoCities and make a new website and half the population knows what GeoCities is. But it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Either you're really not intelligent and you're doing this ass backwards, or there's a reason you're doing this.
Exactly. And I don't know. I cannot for the life of me understand the logic behind it. Mm-hmm. Especially in light of, you know, the way that the judicial system works and the way that the criminal justice system works is that, you know, if somebody's convicted and they want to appeal their case, they rely on the record and the docket. It's the Bible. Like, if it's not in the record, it doesn't exist in the appellate court's world, man. So it's like exceptionally important that the record is clear, that the docket is clear. So when they did that and then they didn't include the dates of filings on anything, it's like, how, if Allen were to be convicted, how is the appellate court to make heads or tails of the record, you know? So it's like, it was problematic in a lot of different ways beyond just the true crime world being irritated. It was fundamentally incorrect in the way that it was done for, you know, the system in and of itself, meaning that the appellate process is going to be completely jacked up with the case. So that continues to go on all the way up through when Baldwin and Rosie are removed, up until the last thing that she did prior to the OAs getting filed, which was, you know, Rosie had filed his motion to DQ her being Gull, and to state that, you know, he put a verified statement on the record saying, look, I still consider myself to be Richard Allen's attorney. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she then proceeded to tell the clerk, remove those. Those guys aren't the attorneys for these guys anymore, for Richard Allen anymore. Take them off the docket. So that was kind of the last act. And after that, that's when Maggie Smith and Carol Weineke got involved with the case. And there was a third attorney. I think his last name was Taylor, or it may be a she. I don't want to misname her, but I'm pretty sure his or her last name was Taylor. So they filed this first thing. And the first OA was basically, look, you screwed up the docket. The docket's a mess. And you didn't follow the rules. And these are the rules. And you need to fix it. And so that was it. Like, and they were right. I mean, the docket was screwed up. Now, I think that you and I did an episode probably shortly after that OA was filed, that first one.
Yeah.
And I think what had also happened subsequent to that is that Gull had filed her court order. So that might've been a couple episodes later. Like, so the OA comes out, she's got time to respond. I think it was around mid-November, and like 17th or 18th of November. And like the day of that her response was due, or maybe the day before, later in the evening, one of those two, she prepares this order that basically corrects everything, that is addressing the clerk and saying, okay, I need you to fix all of this stuff. And she enumerates it. And so I remember coming on with you and I'm like, well, that basically moots out the OA. Like, they don't need to, like, she did that so that they don't have to really rule on it, because she fixed it without them having to say, yeah, you screwed up, fix it. So ultimately yesterday, so that kind of leads us to where we're at yesterday. So we get two orders dropped. We get the one that basically denies the writ of mandamus as to the first OA, the one that we just talked about, basically saying in there that it's moot because most of the corrections were made, and that, you know, they did go a little further. They did say, which I find interesting, which we'll talk about when we get to the second one, they did put language in there that procedurally they felt that they skipped a condition precedent, meaning that there was something that they should have filed, namely an interlocutory appeal, before they had gone up to the Supreme Court. So they put that language in there. They were very clear, like, look, you guys should have filed an interlocutory appeal. This could have been handled at the trial court level. And, you know, had that not happened there, then maybe you come up to us, but you guys skipped that thing. And we don't see any reason why substantial injustice, you know, would occur if you didn't just file that down at the trial court level. So, you know, and I found that language to be interesting in light of the fact that we have the second OA. So basically they deny the petition. They state that it looks like the judge has done everything that we would have had her do anyway. And moreover, these are what the rules are. Everybody follow them. And so that was it. So that's it. So then we get the bigger news, which is that the second original action, mm-hmm. which is dealing with the huge mess that this case has become procedurally, which is obviously when we know that Rick Allen's attorneys have been bounced from the case. Gull's been citing that they were grossly negligent in the representation of him. And, you know, it picked a fight. And the fight was the second OA. These attorneys, you know, after they were, I guess Baldwin withdrew, and then she thinks that Rosie withdrew, even though Rosie didn't think that he withdrew because he didn't orally and he didn't file the motion. But she considered, hey, you gave me your word, buddy.
Yeah.
You said you were going to file a motion and you didn't do it, but it's on the record that you were going to do it and you didn't. Well, that's on you. I consider you not to be his lawyer anymore, which, by the way, doesn't follow any of the procedure in the state of Indiana in terms of withdrawing. Like, Rick Allen has to be given notice if his attorneys are going to be withdrawing from the case. It's typically supposed to be in writing. Now, I've talked to many, many Indiana attorneys, and they're like, you know, I mean, like, we kind of play loose and fast with the rules. Like, you know, like, we know what the rule says, but a lot of times it's not uncommon for us to go in and withdraw without written notice. I'm like, yeah, but in those situations, you typically have your defendant standing right next to you and the judge addresses the defendant.
Yeah.
So you know that they know that you're withdrawing from the case, and the judge will say, well, you know, what's your position on this, Mr. or Mrs. Defendant? Do you, you know, do you have a problem with them coming out? None of that happened. Like, the thing on the 19th, Rick Allen was never even brought into the courtroom. Mm-hmm. So that all happened out of his presence. And then, so you get to the 31st, when after Baldwin and Rosie went to the clerk of court, filed their pro bono appearances, which then took them out of the appointed counsel purview and put them into counsel of choice, because it's two different analyses in terms of the way the Sixth Amendment applies. You know, the Supreme Court in Wheat has said that, you know, look, if you're appointed a public defender, you're kind of, you know, you don't really get to pick and choose your lawyer. You know, you're not going to have a Sixth Amendment right that's, you know, where we're going to interfere with, you know, the court saying, like, we're either going to remove that lawyer or you're going to get that lawyer. It's like, you unfortunately, you don't have the money to pay for it, so you're going to get who you're going to get. And when we move to where these guys entered their pro bono appearances and they became his counsel of choice, where he was on the record saying, this is who I want defending me.
Yeah.
My life is on the line. These are the guys I want. And she said, you know, I'm sorry, Mr. Allen, I can't do it. You know, I just find that your guys have been incompetent, grossly negligent, and I can't allow for them to continue on your case. So that led us up to the second OA, which got filed. And that was basically saying all the things that we just talked about, that Rick Allen's Sixth Amendment right has been violated, that these guys were removed without due process under the law. They were given no notice, no proper notice, that a hearing was going to take place. A hearing never did take place. No motion was filed by the state. No motion was filed sua sponte by the judge. Like, there was no semblance of what we call due process, where Rick Allen's given notice and his attorneys are given an opportunity to prepare to defend the motion to DQ. None of that ever happened. So those are the issues that are at play. And the, you know, the thing that kind of gets lost in the shuffle is, in the meantime, there was a trial date set for this thing. And that was January 8th, fast approaching. I mean, if you think about it now, I mean, we're like a month out.
Yeah.
What would have been the beginning of the trial?
Less than, yeah.
And yeah, and you know, and defense counsel was on the record saying they were ready to go. They were going to be filing a speedy trial demand, which they would have kept that trial date. They were going to be ready to go, which I think terrified the judge.
Yeah.
I think that the thought of everything that had to be done in that short a period of time put her in a position where she's like, oh my God, I have to figure something out. And she ended up using the leaks that occurred. And, you know, the other few things that she put in there about them filing a notice of preserving Allen's right to file civil suit against Westville Prison. And, you know, like, there were a couple other things. None of them rose to the level that these guys should be removed from the case. You know, they were all collateral type issues. You know, I mean, the leak, had it gotten out to the public en masse, you know, I mean, maybe then we're having a conversation. Well, did that taint the jury pool?
Yeah.
And then we're looking at like, okay, well, you know, Baldwin didn't do it intentionally, but, you know, was he sloppy in that, like, he didn't have his door locked every second of every day if he's not in there to the conference room, which to me is unreasonable. You know, it's just not realistic in terms of a law practice, you know, because, I mean, these aren't classified government documents that you have to, you know, like, have to have some kind of classification in order to view them. I mean, they're crime scene photos and it's discovery from a case that's going to be a public trial. So
yeah, and they're not working at a Regis, you know, where
it's right, like exactly
a shared office space or something of that nature.
Exactly. So ultimately we get to the point where this order comes down. We're all kind of hoping that an opinion would come out. And ultimately, we find out that they're going to have oral arguments on January 18th at 11 a.m. at the Indiana Supreme Court, where they're going to argue it out. They get an hour total, half hour each side. They could break it up. So, I know that if you're following the case heavily, and Kara is not going to be arguing it. Her co-author in the petition is Mark Lehman, is going to be arguing in front of the Supreme Court. And that's because Kara's got another argument in front of the Supreme Court the following week. So, you know, she wants to be prepared for that. So it's going to be interesting, man.
Sick of the ads?
We opt to.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.